Okay, let's start. So in the last class, we were talking about how to build a direct map cache. And then we also talked about how it introduces conflicts when there are multiple blocks with the same set index, because in direct mapped cache, we only have one place where a block with the same index can go. And then we introduce the concept of associativity, which basically says that instead of having just one slot for all the blocks with the same index, we will have multiple slots, and that is decided by the number of associativity. So if it's E way set associative cache, that means that now we have E places to put all the blocks they have that have the same index. And you can think about why stop with E. Like if it's providing better benefit, why don't we just go to all way where we just have one set and all the blocks in the cache belong to that one set. So in terms of flexibility, this has the highest flexibility because we can put any block within that set anywhere. But the downside is because they all just belong to one set, now we have to do the tag matches for all the blocks in that set to figure out if that's a cache hit or cache miss. So basically, it can provide better benefit, but it has higher complexity. And direct map cache, it is the simplest one, but it may introduce conflictnesses. Then we were talking about given one address, how we determine which blocks belong to our offset, index, and tag. And for set associative cache, it was almost the same as direct map cache. In order to determine the number of offset bits, we look at the block size, and it usually it's some power of 2 that decides how many bits we need. Then we will look at how many number of sets we have in our cache, and that will give us how many index bits we have. Rest of the bits, they will go to the tag. And there was this one difference with direct map cache, that how we determine the total size of the cache. And whenever we say the cache size, it actually means the portion where we put the data. It doesn't include our dirty, our valid bits or the tag bits. And the cache size is it's block size multiplied by number of sets multiplied by associativity. So given these formulas, we are trying to figure out what would be the splitting of tag index offset with these realistic cache configurations. So we had three configurations, L1, L2, L3. They had different size of cache, different associativity, but same block size. So we want to know that given this address, 0x34567, how should we split the address into tag, index, and offset? So I think we went through the first one at that time. So for, you can see that all the blocks in three levels of cache, they have the same size. So for that one, it was pretty easy. We just look at the size of the block, and it's 64 bytes, which is 2^6. So essentially, we need 6 bits for our offset. Next, we want to know that what is the bits we need for indexing the sets. And if you look at our formulas, we need the number of sets in order to determine this index information. And we see that given the information we have here, it's not directly given that how many sets we need, so we actually need to calculate it based on whatever information we have. So what we did was we got the number of sets from this equation which we used to calculate the total cache size. Cache size is a multiple of associativity, block size, and number of sets. So C, total cache size that we already have. We also have the number of the associativity of the cache, and we know the block size. So from there, we were figuring out how many sets we have. And after that, it's a simple formula that 64 is a power of 6. So we need 6 bits for index. So that was for L1. And now I will, given that information, I will ask you to do the same thing for L2 and L3. But once you have that information, like try to divide this address into tag, index, and offset. I guess I will give you maybe 3-4 minutes for that. Okay, let's match the answers. So here first, okay, so the number of block offset bits, that same for all of them, right? But after that, we actually need to figure out the number of sets in L1, L2, and L3. and basically depends on the size of the cache. So we had 256 kilobyte and 8 megabyte, and essentially we use the block size and associativity to get the number of sets, and that gives us the number of bits we need for index. And rest of the bits, they will just go to the tag. But then, given the address that we had, if we want to figure out the exact number of set index and tags, basically we it's very intuitive. Just write down the number in binary. And now for offsets, for all three levels of cache, we know that it's the lower six order bits, and basically that translates into in hexadecimal 27, because the higher order two bits, that's two, and then we have seven. And similarly, after we have the offset bit, the next six bits for L1, it will give us the index, and rest of them will just be our tag. For L2, we take the next 10 bits, and that becomes our index, rest of the bits, tag, and similar for L3. Any question on how to determine this tag index offset splitting? Because you have an assignment where you have to do it. Okay. So now let's go to different types of misses we can see in our cache. So we talked about one, but let's go through all of them one by one. So we can have three types of misses. First one, it is called the compulsory miss. And basically, this is where a program is accessing some data for the first time. It's also called cold miss because the way we have designed the cache, whatever we access for the first time, it will never be in the cache. So however we design the cache, it's just intuitively that's how we have designed the cache, that anything we access for the first time, it's always a miss. Only after we have accessed it once, we bring it in the cache. So however we design the cache, we will always have these compulsory misses for anything we are accessing for the first time. Then the second one is conflict miss. We kind of touched it earlier. So it's just the set that we have, it's just not big enough to hold all the blocks that can have the same set index. So if you think about it, if we have a fully associative cache, that's the most flexible one. So if there is a cache configuration with fully associative cache, which don't have a miss, but suddenly if we move to some smaller number of associativity, we will see those conflict misses. So the conflict misses are the ones which will go away if suddenly we can come up with a fully associative cache. So those are the ones we will call conflict miss. And capacity miss is anything which are left. So if it just means that somehow the cache is just not big enough to hold all data, so that's why we are having some misses. Any question here? I guess let's just summarize. Anything we are touching for the first time, that's a compulsory miss. We have some set associative cache, but we just have more blocks which maps into the same set index. We just don't have enough associativity to hold all those blocks. That would be conflict miss, and this should go away if we had a fully associative cache. And then cache is always smaller than the memory, so there would be cases where we are just accessing a larger working set, it doesn't fit in our cache. So these are the capacity bits where if we somehow increase the size of the cache, we will eliminate those. Any question? So one design decision that we haven't talked about yet for associative caches is what policy we should take into account when we have a conflict miss. So what was a conflict miss? We have a set associative cache, and within a set, all the ways contain some valid data, and suddenly we have a miss which maps to the same set, and we don't have any more space to put the new block. That means that somehow we have to decide that either we want to replace the block which is at way 0 or way 1. And that's the decision, that decision is made by replacement policy. So there could be multiple ways to come up with a policy, but the most prominent one is called least recently used. So in caches, the way we are exploiting the locality is we are saying that anything we have accessed now is more important than whatever we have referenced earlier. So we take into account that intuition and say that the block that has been accessed least recently, we will just assume that that's the least important one, and we will evict that one whenever we have some conflict miss. But now that means that somehow we need to keep track of this ordering, that which block has been recently accessed, which has been least recently accessed. So that's why now we have these extra metadata, which is keeping track of this LRU information. And when we want to evict a block, now we have to consult these metadata to determine that which block is the least recently used one. And here you can see that we just have two-way set associative cache. So here things are very simple. We can't have just one bit which says that if way 0 is the least recently used one, or the way 1 is the least recently used one. So, but I guess if we had more ways in our cache, for example, let's assume we have 16 ways set associative cache. So then we need more bits to decide what's the total ordering of these blocks. And that will tell us that what block we should evict when we have a miss. So now think about it, like we are keeping a total ordering of all the blocks in my set. That means that whenever I access something that became the recently used one, and the state of all the other blocks, that also needs to be updated. So that means that this LRU information that needs to be updated every time we are accessing some block. So least recently used, that's the most common one, and it also exploits the temporal locality. But then because it requires the total ordering of all the blocks, it needs some metadata, and also it needs some accesses to update all this metadata at every access. So sometimes instead of doing that, because hardware wants things very simple, instead of using true LRU, they use some pseudo LRU policies where they try to keep less information, or which needs to be updated less, and use that. But that's just one policy. We could use many other policies. For example, we could use first in, first out, the FIFO policy. Basically, it just says that if something is accessed the first, it should be evicted first. But that also needs some metadata, and we have to update that metadata at every access. So for some hardware, they decided that we don't want to add this complexity at all. So instead of using a specific replacement policy, we will just randomly evict one block in MISAP. So that's the random policy. And apparently, people find out that the random policy is not that bad. The misread with random policy is actually not that bad. What's the reason? The reason is usually when people are designing these caches, we have a bunch of realistic workloads, and we try to figure out how these policies perform when we have these realistic workloads with different policies. And real workloads, they have many different access patterns. Some of them may have locality that very much batches with LRU. Some of them may have some random locality. So at the end, on average, it happens that random is not that bad if we look at a bunch of applications and the average miss rate. But this is a, but you can think about more complicated mechanisms which may have better hit rate. But then we actually have to implement more things in the hardware. So it's a trade-off between how much performance we get versus how complex the algorithm is. So let's do an exercise with how we should evict data with LRU replacement policy. And here we have two sets. Each block can have 4 bytes, and we have a bunch of addresses. I guess let's see the tag index offset split. Because we have 4 bytes, we just need 2 bytes for the block, and then because we have just 2 sets, we need 1 bit for set index. So here the important thing is, in addition to fetching the block on a miss, we actually have to update this LRU metadata at every access. So given that we are employing LRU policy, the question is how many accesses will hit the cache. I guess you can try the exercise, talk to your neighbors, and then we will match our answers. Okay, first axis, hit or miss? So the first one, we see that it will map to the first set. The cache is empty, so we fetch the block and put it here. And now this one is the one which we have referenced most recently. So we will just update our LRU state saying that wave one is the least recently used, even though I guess at this time it doesn't matter because it's still empty. For the next axis, it becomes hit, so I will just ignore it. Let's go to the third axis. So that one, it maps to set zero, and because it's a miss, we bring the block and then we put the value here, the slot that is still empty. So now this value is the recently used one. That means that the tag zero, the way zero, becomes our least recently used block. Now we have a bunch of more misses, and essentially we have another access to the next set. So we bring it in from memory, update our way information, and then here we have a hit which goes to our first set again. And before, if it was a hit, we actually didn't have to do anything else other than that getting the block and sending it to the processor. But now you can see that after we do the tag match, then we know that it matches to the one that is at this one, right? So now we actually have to update our LRU state and say that the least recently used block has become this way one. So till now, I guess all the examples that we have seen, we only had an address and we tried to figure out if it's a hit or miss. So we never said if it's a write miss or write hit or read miss. But there is actually some distinction when we are handling the writes. So think about it. The processor has a request. It says that write some value to some specific location. And we will go through the same lookup procedure. And maybe we find that, okay, this is a cache hit. This address belongs to our cache. So now we actually have to update this block. In cache, now it has our new value, which is 10. But if you don't do anything right now, that means that in the memory, we had this address 2, and it contains the old value. Like, it doesn't have the new value of 10, so now these two values are not consistent anymore. So the question is, given that we have a hit in the cache, but it's a write miss, what should we do? So there are two options, and one option, the first option that we will talk about is called write through, which basically says that we don't want these inconsistency in two values. And here I just have the cache and memory, but in reality it could be L1, L2, L3 memory. So you don't want inconsistent values in all these cache levels. So in write through policy, once we have updated the data, we forward the write request to the lower levels of memory so that essentially all the values become updated in our memory hierarchy. So because we are writing all the way through the memory hierarchy, this is called the write through policy. So what is the advantage? The advantage is now we don't have any inconsistency. Like if all the labels in the cache and memory, they all have our updated data. But the disadvantage is now for every write request, we have to forward multiple write requests to other labels. If this is L1, then we have to send that request to L2, L3, and memory if they all are using this write-through policy. So what are the other options? The other option is if I have a write, I update my value in my cache, but then we don't forward any request to other levels. So now we have inconsistent values in different levels. But that also means that at some point of time, we have to make things consistent. So what we do is we track that what are the values that we have updated in our cache. So those are the dirty, like we have this dirty bit, which indicates if a block has been updated or not. And then when we replace the block, maybe there is some other read request and suddenly we decide, the LRU decides that this is the block we want to replace. So we actually have to send this extra write to memory and make the value consistent. So here, we don't have to send write through request every time we have a write. So for example, if we have 10 write requests to this block ABCD, we have avoided the first 9 write through requests. We only write back once when it's evicted. Also, but I guess the disadvantage here is now we need a mechanism to track that which block has been modified and which one has not. So now we need this dirty bit in our metadata to keep track of that information. So now if you think about when we have a conflict miss for write back cache, we actually have multiple steps to go through. So the first step, we had a request, write request to cache, and we updated the data in our cache and marked it as dirty. Now, suppose we have another request which conflicts with this cache block, and we decide that now we want to evict this block. So what we have to do? First, we have to issue a write request which updates the data in memory. And also, we have to read the new value from memory and put it in the cache. So before, if we had a read miss, we just read the data from memory and put it in the cache. So now we have this extra step we have to go through. So this is how it would look like when we have added this dirty bit in our cache metadata. And essentially, when we are replacing something, we look at the dirty bit and decide that if the value changed or not while it was in the cache. And if it's 1, this dirty bit is 1, we decide that we have to send a write back request to lower level of memory. Yes?
So does it check the dirty bit first before the LRU? As in when we have a conflict miss, do we first look for which one is dirty first?
So first we have to look at the LRU bit and decide which one we want to evict. So this LRU metadata, it will say that what is the candidate for replacement, which block is the candidate for replacement. And for example, if the LRU had said that evict this one, so then we check the dirty bit, and we actually see that this block didn't get modified. So in this case, we didn't have to issue anything. We will just read the new data from memory and put it here. But Here, LRU said that the least recently used lock is this one. And we check the dirty bit, and we see that this is an updated block. So the content, we have to update the content in memory. So that's when we actually send a new write request. Any more questions? Okay. So far when I showed the example, I said that we have a write request and it is a hit in the cache. But it could also happen that I have a write request, we look up the cache and the block is not present, so it's a cache miss. So now we actually have two options to deal with the write miss. So for the first option, we can just treat it as a read miss. We can fetch the whole block from memory, put it in the cache, and then update the portion that the processor wants to write. That is called write allocate because we are allocating a block and in the cache and fetching the block from memory and putting it in there. So the benefit of write allocate is taking advantage of locality. So if there is some other future requests which will read the same block, so in that case, it will provide us extra cache hits. The other option is write no allocate, which basically says that if we have a write miss, don't fetch the data from memory, just send that write request to our memory. So why should we want to do that? So for example, if my block is 256 byte, and I'm updating this 4-byte integer. Maybe instead of if the bandwidth is really important, instead of bringing this whole block, I just send this 4-byte of update to memory. But then we cannot exploit any locality. So if there is any future read after write request in the same block, then this write no allocate won't be able to take advantage of that. Any questions? So here, let's assume that we have two sets and we have a cache which has LRU replacement policy and it has a write-back policy when there is a cache hit. So if we want to write to some address 0x04, we determine that the index is 0, so and the tag is 0001. So basically, it's a cache miss. So the first step to handle this cache miss when we have a write allocate cache is determine which is our least recently used block. And here, our LRU data, it says that replace this WAN block. And then we look at the dirty bit and find that this is actually, this block has been updated. So now we have to write back this block and then we read the new block and put it here and update the LRU information because we just access this WAN bit, then LRU block becomes the WAN0 block. Any questions? But for write no allocate, what will happen? So it's the same case that we have a write miss and we see that it's not in the cache. So for write no allocate policy, we actually won't fetch the block at all. We will just send it send the request to memory to update the block. So there is no additional step that we need to do. Clear, any comment, question? Okay. So one thing we should make it clear that, so if we have, if we are thinking about write, we have updated the value in a cache, then depending on write back or write through, we may have to do multiple writes in the memory hierarchy. But that's not, like, the processor doesn't get blocked for all this to be completed. We actually have small write buffers which hold the values that we want to write back. And as soon as the writes place the values in the write buffer, we actually assume that the writes are done and the processor can proceed. So it's like a more, it's like an optimization for performance. It's a fast write path using some extra buffer for all the write data. So now we have talked about multiple cache parameters. Like in our cache organization, we talked about direct map cache, associativity, cache size, different replacement policies, different write policies. So when someone is trying to design a cache, maybe at Intel or AMD, they have all these large parameters, large parameter space they have to explore and determine that which one they want to use. And typically what they do is they take some representative set of workloads and they build a simulator which, given different parameters, give us what would be the performance or miss rate with those specific parameters or cache configuration. So for example, let's assume we want to know what happens when we increase the cache size or increase the associativity of a cache, how the miss rate changes with that. And the other things are fixed, like the block size is fixed. We will always use LRU replacement policy. So they build this simulator, they change the parameters, and they figure out what are the miss rate. So first, let's see that what happens if we increase the cache size. So if I go column-wise, you can see that once we move towards higher capacity, the miss rate decreases. So it's kind of true for all of the configurations here. But there is this diminishing return of having larger capacity. From 1 kilobyte to 2 kilobyte, the reduction in miss rate is higher, but it's much lower when we are going from 64 kilobyte to 128 kilobyte. And it's consistent for all these configurations. Like for fully associative cache, it's like the difference is really small. So what it says that when we have larger cache, at some point of time, we don't reduce the miss rate that much. And it depends on what is the working set size of our workloads. So if the cache is really small, we have many misses. So increasing the cache size reduces some of the misses. But at some point of time, maybe all of the data that we are accessing at the same time, they fit in the cache. So then increasing it even more does not provide us any more benefit. Then if we look at row-wise, so given a fixed size of the cache, if we increase the associativity, what happens? So you can again see that there is a diminishing return. So in the beginning, like let's example this one, the reduction in miss rate is much higher compared to the reduction we have when we go from 8-way to fully associative. So that means that whatever conflicts we have, eventually once we have more ways in our cache, we actually eliminate all the conflicts that we see in our programs, and fully associative cache does not provide us much more benefit. And also, there is a cost associated with that, right? Fully associative caches, they are more complex, so they would be more expensive to implement. So in that case, maybe 8-way is a reasonable choice, given that it has better miss rate than direct map, but at the same time, 8-way is not that complex to implement compared to a fully associative cache. Any questions? Okay. So whenever we are trying to reason about cache performance, we need to keep in mind these four parameters: hit time, miss rate, miss penalty, miss time. So hit time is the time we need to look up the cache to determine if it's a hit or miss, and then get the value in the cache. So typically, hit time should be pretty low for L1 cache. Maybe one cycle if we want to keep the throughput high. Then miss rate is the fraction of accesses that misses the cache. And that one we actually want to keep it pretty low to reduce the number of total misses. Then the third one, miss penalty, is actually the time that we need to bring data if there is a miss. So for example, if I'm at L3 cache and it's a miss, then I have to bring data from memory, which may take 200 cycles. So that is the penalty we are paying for a cache miss. But if it's in L1, maybe we find the block in L2. In that case, the penalty may be lower because L2, we can access it much faster than the main memory. And then miss time is actually hit time plus miss penalty, because in order to determine if it's a cache hit or miss, we actually have to go through this step. We have to look up the cache and do all the tag matching and determine if it's hit or miss. And if it's a miss, then we have to pay this extra time to fetch that data from memory. So essentially, if we want to reason about the average memory access latency, it's hit time, which is the time we need, either it's a hit or miss. And then we need to sum up the time which we have to pay if it's a miss. If it's a miss, we have to pay this extra penalty, and how many times we have to pay that penalty, that will depend on the miss rate of the cache. So essentially, if we want to reduce the average memory access time, we can try to reduce the hit time, we can try to reduce the miss penalty, or we can try to reduce the miss rate. So we have three options to consider. Any question here? Okay, so before we go into how we can decrease or increase these parameters, so whenever we are trying to reason about the cache performance, we are talking about typical programs which have locality. So there would be always some corner cases where we can come up with an access pattern where caches are not effective at all. So for example, this is a typical access pattern which will give us 0% hit rate. What is that? For example, we start with an empty cache, first we access a bunch of stuff and fill the cache. Once the cache is all filled up, now we access something which needs to replace one block in the cache. After that, we continually keep accessing the block which we just replaced. So that means that every time we are accessing it, we just replaced it. So basically, all the accesses will become a miss. So this is a pathological case which will give us zero hit rate. But when we are trying to reason about what happens if we change some parameter and try to determine how it affects the miss rate, typically we will just assume that these are real workloads with some locality in it. So that being said, now let's take a look at what will happen to miss rate, hit time, and miss penalty if we change these things in our cache configuration. So at the end, we want to decrease the average time, and we have three things which we can change. So for example, now we want to change some cache parameters and figure out how they will affect these parameters, these hit rate, miss rate, and miss penalty. So the first one, if we increase our cache size, that basically means that now we have eliminated some capacity miss, and definitely our miss rate should go low, so that's good. But then, because we are increasing the cache size, it means that we need more time to access the cache. So hit time could actually get worse. Second, if we increase the associativity, definitely we're supposed to reduce the number of config misses. So miss rate would get better. But again, because having more associativity requires complex logic in the hardware, our hit time will become worse. If we increase the block size, if it means that we have increased our cache size, then actually the hit time will get worse. But also think about if we increase the block size but we don't change the cache size, what will happen?
We either reduce the number of blocks or the number of sets.
Yes, so based on that, miss rate could change depending on that. Then let's take a look at the parameters with related to write. So for write allocate, we should always have better miss rate, because if there is any special locality, if we allocate the block, then we are supposed to have some additional hits for that block. So the miss rate should be better. And LRU replacement policy instead of some random policy, it should also give us better miss rate. So for this one, I guess adding a secondary cache, here the miss penalty would get better, because that says that instead of going to the memory, which takes 200 cycles, now we have something in between where maybe we can access it within 20 cycles. So all the other parameters, those are mainly related to miss rate and hit time. But in order to make this miss penalty better, we need to add secondary caches. So that's why you can see that in real memory hierarchy, we have multiple levels, which reduces these. Then for L1, we have very small cache, which reduces the hit time. And then we have different replacement policies, which tries to reduce this miss rate. Any questions? Okay, let's also try to see that how this affects our different types of misses. So if we have increased the cache size, definitely we should reduce the capacity miss. It should also reduce the config miss if we have added more blocks or more state associativity, like how we have increased the cache size. If we increase the associativity, definitely we will reduce the config miss, but it cannot do anything about our capacity miss. Then for compulsory miss, we know that this is the first miss we have when we are accessing something. So increasing the cache size or associativity, it doesn't help us. But there could be something we could do with increasing the block size. So for example, if we increase the block size, but we keep all the other parameters the same, that means that now we have change the number of sets we have. That could, like now we have larger block size, but because we say that the cache size is the same, the number of sets we have now is smaller, so that could actually lead to more conflicts. So this is an important thing to remember, that when we are asking something, like if we are asking some cache question where some parameters changed, you have to be careful about thinking of which parameters are still the same and which one changed. So here, for example, we have one question which says that initially we have 64 byte of blocks, 4 sets, 8 with set associative. And we want to know which one of these changes, reduces the number of capacity miss when we increase the block size or number of sets or number of associativity. But you can see that here we say that these parameters will remain unchanged and we will change only one thing. And the parameters that we have here, they don't include the cache size. So that means that if I take the first one, changing the block size. So block size was 64. Now it became 256 byte because we are increasing it by 4x. And we said that other things will remain the same. So we still have 64 sets. We still have 8 wasted associated. So at the end, now we have just increased the whole cache size. So that means that if we have increased the whole cache size, it should definitely reduce the capacity miss. For the second one, quadrupling the number of sets. So the number of sets was 64, now it will become 256. And the number of ways and the size of the block still remains the same, which basically means that the cache size became larger. So that also should reduce the capacity miss and same bit. But here we have another question, which is slightly different. Like it's very similar to the old one, but it says that when we are changing the parameters, we will keep the cache size the same. Or we will change one parameter, but all the remaining parameters would remain same. And we are still asking that which one will reduce the capacity miss. So I will give you maybe like 2-3 minutes to think about what would be the correct answers. anyone wants to volunteer? So is A correct or not? Who thinks it's correct? Who thinks it's not correct? Okay, I see a bunch of hands. So basically, we are increasing the block size, but keeping the cache size the same, SOCDVD the same. That just means that we have to reduce the number of sets, and that should not lead to reduction in capacity miss. Same thing here. We are only changing the SOCDVD, but keeping the cache size the same. It should not affect the capacity miss. But for C, here we are increasing the cache size, so definitely it will reduce the capacity miss. Then we can change it slightly and ask you about the config miss. And again, remember that the size of the cache is the same here. And then we are changing some things. So this is the one I will let you think about at home. But these are kind of questions you will expect in exams. So I want to, so till now, we talked about cache access patterns, locality, try to reason about cache performance. But we actually didn't go through any real workload or some code snippets, right? So now we want to take some C code and reason about how that will affect our cache miss rate. Here we have an array, and then we have a loop which is going over all the array element and taking partial sum. But the partial sum is for all the even elements and then for all the odd elements. So there are two sums that we are trying to calculate. And now let's assume that we have this array in our, we can keep only this array in our cache and everything else, let's just assume it's not in the cache to make things simpler. And the array starts from address 0. So we have this big chunk of data, 4 kilobyte data, which we were accessing almost sequentially. And our cache is 2 kilobyte. So it's smaller than whatever data we are accessing. And the block size is 16 byte. So now we want to know that given this access pattern, what will be our cache miss for this code? I guess I will give you a couple of minutes to think about it. Please discuss with your neighbors.
Box.
anyone wants to volunteer? Yes.
Is it 2 to the 5th?
2 to the power 5th, which is 32. Okay, let's see if there are any other answer or everyone agrees with that, okay?
I thought, I think either 255 or 256, depending on where the array starts.
The array starts at 0, at
okay,
0.
Okay, then I'd say 255.
Okay, I guess let's go through the example and then we will come back to that. So how should we determine it? So first thing we should look at it is we are sequentially accessing all the blocks, right? So we start from 0, 1, then increase I by 2, so 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. So first time, the first block we are accessing is at array element, the first element, which is at address 0. And that will be a miss because there is nothing in the cache. So after that, we have brought in a 16 byte of cache block, which will contain 4 of those elements of our array because it's an integer array. So once I have brought the first block, I not only have array at index 0, I also have 2 array index 1, 2, and 3. So that means that once I have the first miss, when I access array at index 1, it will be a hit. When I access 2 and 3, those two will also be hits. So then we access the next element at index 5. Now this will be a miss again. And again, we bring a whole cache block which can contain 16 bytes of data, so 4 elements in our array. So apparently, we will have one miss at every 4th element. So our cache is 2 kilobytes, so we will have one cache miss every 4 elements. And at that, after that, our cache is all full. But because it's a direct map cache, then the rest of these 2 kilobytes, they will map to the same sets that will go, like we fill up sequentially the direct map cache and then we round back to the first position. So for those elements also, eventually we have these one miss at every 4 cache accesses. So we have 1,024 entries, and if there is one miss every 4 accesses, that's 256. Our other way to think about is we have these 4 kilobytes of data, and we have one miss for every cache block. So 4 kilobytes divided by 16 bytes, whatever that becomes, it will become 256. The key here to remember is because of spatial locality, whenever we are bringing some block, we actually eliminated some of the misses depending on how we are accessing the cache. So we have this almost the exact same code, which does the same exact thing. It goes over all the array elements, calculates the even sum and odd sum. But now you will find out that the number of misses we have may not be the same anymore. So even though they're touching the same amount of data in the program, because the way we bring things in the cache, it may get different. So we will take a look at this example in the next class. But I guess the key point here is, even if both of the programs are doing the same thing, based on how you have written your program, one may have more misses than the others. So that's why it's important to know that how caching works and how it can affect your performance. So that's it for today. See you next week.